RS Interview. Vlada pripravlja dva zakona o solastništvu zaposlenih v podjetjih. Gre za model solastništva zaposlenih imenovan SLO ESOP, slovensko različico ameriškega Employee Stock Ownership Plana, krajše ESOPa. Delavci prek zadruge oziroma sklada dobijo izplačan del dobička podjetja, pri katerem so zaposleni. Ko delavec zapusti podjetje, novi solastnik podjetja postane delavec, ki ga nasledi ali nadomesti, saj od prvega delavca ESOP zadruga oziroma sklad odkupi njegove delnice. Podjetja, ki se odločijo za ta način solastništva, so deležna davčnih olajšav. O ESOP-u v Združenih državah Amerike in Sloveniji ter o zakonih v pripravi smo se pogovarjali z Davidom P. Ellermanom, ustanoviteljem in predsednikom Inštituta za ekonomsko demokracijo, ki Ministrstvu za gospodarstvo in Ministrstvu za delo nudi strokovne predloge pri pripravi zakonov.
So my first question is, I've read somewhere that this process of worker ownership and this democratic process that the workers are part of is radically democratic. What makes it so?
Well, the one of the improvements we've made over the American ESOP, the American ESOP is a trust, and a trust is something you put assets in when somebody is too young or is senile. And when a kid inherits money, they don't just give the money to the kid, they put it in a trust. And so all the American ESOPs are owned by a trust where the trustee basically makes the decisions for all the shares that are in the ESOP. And that's not democratic, and that's on purpose. See, the ESOP came out of a right-wing, let's make more workers into owners. Not the left wing. So, but it has been very successful in the sense of converting a lot of companies. There's something like 300 or 400 worker cooperatives in America, but 7,000 ESOPs. So rather than continue to push worker cooperatives, which are radically democratic, we decided to change the ESOP so it becomes more democratic. So use a mechanism that's working and you make it democratic. And that's one of the big changes we made in the Slovene model, is that we replaced the trust by a worker cooperative. So the workers will, it's a cooperative, and it will own a certain percentage of the shares. It will eventually get up to 100%. But it's one person, one vote, not one share, one vote inside the cooperative. And then they vote those shares in the company. So if it's a 30% ESOP, then they will, vote 30% of the shares democratically in one person, one vote, which is radically democratic.
And now a very basic question, but what are the benefits of worker ownership? And if there are any downsides, what are they?
Well, the benefits, it changes the whole way in which income is distributed. Number one, that as you know, ever since the neoliberal revolution with Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher, there's been a huge explosion in pay for CEOs, a huge explosion in wealth of the top 1%, and it's just getting worse. So worker ownership changes all that. It puts the workers in the position as the owners. So it's different from what many social democratic countries do, is they keep the ordinary capitalist in charge and then they try to tax them more. And that's called redistribution, whereas the ESOP is what we call pre-distribution. So that they get the income directly. You don't have to tax the rich. The rich are not owners anymore in those companies. The downside is the people that have the power now get less income, of course. And they're the ones that determine the legislation very often. And so in America, we've been very careful to try to make it bipartisan. So you get the conservatives will support it for conservative reasons. For example, one of the big supporters of this bill that was mentioned today is Marco Rubio, who's a senator from Florida, and which is a very Catholic state. And so he has his support out of Catholic social thought. And of course, the best example of worker ownership in the world is the Mondragon cooperatives in the Basque region of Spain. And that was all started and structured by a priest, a Catholic priest. So you have that sort of a right-wing support, and then you have the usual left-wing support of workers are now getting not just wage workers, but are becoming the members of their enterprise. And you're basically making the enterprise so it's no longer for sale, because the shares are held in this special purpose vehicle, the cooperative in our case. And so workers have so many shares in their account inside the cooperative, but they cannot sell those shares. They cannot give them to their children or bequeath them, as we say. So once the ownership goes into the ESOP, it just cycles. The older generation is bought out by the younger generation, so it remains employee-owned. And that gives you stability. So you don't have these companies being bought and sold. The company becomes a democratic community of work rather than a community of residents. I mean, your vote in Ljubljana city elections is based on you being a resident. And here, you don't have to buy the vote. You cannot sell the vote. You cannot bequeath the vote to somebody else. You qualify for that vote by being a resident, and a citizen and a resident in Ljubljana. And in a workplace democracy, you qualify for membership by working in that company. And so the ESOP tends to, if you think of it in institutional terms, it defeats the employment relationship. It says you don't have rights because you're an employee. You have rights because you're an owner. And so working in the company makes you a member, makes you an owner through the this co-op where you have this account. So we think it's a big improvement over the American ESOP in that regard. And I should mention there's another regard. The American ESOP was legislated as a special carve-out of pension. Pension funds, private pension funds, which I don't know if you even have them here, they cannot invest so if you have a General Motors private pension fund, it cannot invest in General Motors stock. So ESOPs are a carve-out. It says, okay, ESOP is different. ESOP can invest, it's a pension plan, but it can invest 100% in the shares of the underlying company. And that's just an artifact, an artificial characteristic of the way it was legislated. But that means you've got a 25-year-old worker, and you're telling him, now you're an owner, and you're going to see some cash when you retire. And that doesn't help you. You know, you're 25, you need to buy a car, you need to buy a house, and apartment. So we've changed that too. So rather than letting the amount owed to the workers accumulate, we pay it out as we go. And that's when you recycle the shares. You're buying out the shares and from the older workers, and they're going to the younger workers. So we made two fundamental improvements in the American ESOP and tried to maintain the benefits of the American ESOP. The payments are not coming out of the workers' wages. Typically the ESOP will take out a loan, buy shares from the retiring owner, and then the company makes contributions to the ESOP that pays off the loan. So the company is actually like buying itself out in the favor of the workers. It gets workers in ownership without taking salary reductions. And in fact, of course, being owners, they may well have more productivity and better salaries in the future.
And now I'm interested in, why do some firm owners decide to join ESOP? You've said that they earn less because of it. So do they have any other benefits that would persuade them to join this program?
Yeah. Well, they earn less in the sense that they could get more money if they sell to a competitor or to private equity. But both those options basically will destroy the company. And we've seen that here in Slovenia with Adria Airways was bought by a private equity company and then within a number of years was destroyed. And so one of the other public issues we should mention is trying to prevent private equity from coming in and doing the same to other Slovene firms. But the reasoning for the retiring owner, and we're not doing firms just with retiring owners. Also, I should mention, so retiring owner is saying, this is my baby, my legacy. I built this firm with the help of these employees, and am I gonna choose to get more money and then have the firm destroyed? And that leaves to what was called a bad exit. So the community says, oh, great, you got more money, but now, 5 years later, the firm's destroyed and those jobs are gone from this community. I hope you enjoy your money wherever you are. But you don't want that to be your legacy. So you want to find some way to ensure the succession of the firm that'll stay in the community, provide those jobs, those tax incentives, and so forth. And then the tax benefits also help to weigh that decision. So the owner has to say, okay, my legacy counts, and the tax benefits will help to equalize the opportunity. So given the option of selling to an outsider, getting the firm destroyed in 5 to 10 years, or selling for a lower price but getting tax benefits, which will help equalize it, and preserving my legacy, what I built, my life's work is this firm, is an important thing. And that's, that's why I was talking to one person, ESOP advisor, and he said, whenever I'm talking to a retiring owner and I hear the word legacy, then I know I'm in the right church. See, in America, we have a lot of churches. In Slovenia, you got one big church. So he was saying, then I know that this guy has the right values. But a lot of the firms we're dealing with now in Slovenia are not the case of retiring owners. They're just people that want to have a company of co-owners. So many IT companies, huge number of IT companies, and people, once you have a person that you've worked with in the company, knows your internal company codes or ways of working, you don't want them to be attracted away to some other firm. And so by making them a co-owner now, you're ensuring that these people will not be attracted away and go somewhere else. And just to give you another example, a country that's failing is Croatia, and young people want to leave. There's a worker-owned company up in near Vojvodina, a while back, we heard the story that the young people came in and the director of the company says, now you're going to become owners. And they said, oh, we don't want to become owners. They said, what do you mean you don't want to become owners? I said, well, if we become owners, then we can't go to Europe. So that's the whole point. If you become owners, then you want to stay and not leave. So we know that's a real effect. And that's why so many IT companies are now saying, well, I want to bring my workers into ownership, even though I'm not retiring. I'm still a, 35, 40-year-old entrepreneur, but I want my people to stay. And that's, Duisoft, for example, is thinking like that. They in Tribolia, and they want something to get those workers to stay. And after they train them and everything. So ownership is a way to do that. And that's not retiring. They want a company of owners.
So, yeah, I want to ask also, is it just IT companies or is it other kinds of companies as well? And how big are these companies? Can this only work for small companies or can this also work on a large scale?
Well, until the law passes, the we're working on a what we call a pilot phase where we don't have the same tax benefits. And that pilot model only works for DOOs, not DDs. And so DOOs, of course, are smaller than DDs. But there's no intrinsic restriction. The biggest ESOP in America is 200,000 workers. A year ago at our first Congress, we had a CEO of 100% ESOP in Chicago that has 17,000 workers and is very capital intensive. It makes railroad wheels and carriages and so forth. So there's a lot of companies that will convert. And it's not particularly restricted. I mean, the direct effect with customers is better in a labor-intensive firm like a supermarket. So the biggest firm with 200,000 is a supermarket chain in Florida and South Carolina and so forth, and called Publix. But and there are several other large supermarket chains in California where I used to live. There's a big supermarket chain and called Winco, and across the front of each store it says employee owned.
You've mentioned the tax incentive, so I'd like to ask you if a firm is subject to a tax incentive, there's less money to spend for public spending, all in all. So how is this then, to say it just plainly good for the state and for its for the people who live there?
Yeah. Well, it's an investment in a form of enterprise. So you're incentivizing a form of enterprise that is good for everybody. If you don't have the tax incentives and people choose to sell to a competitor or private equity, then your firm is, you know, destroyed in 5 to 10 years, and that costs the public a lot in support. And so it's a wise investment for the government to give tax incentives to create a sustainable form of employee ownership, which is also more productive, and thus avoid all those social costs of shut down companies and workers unemployed, et cetera, dying communities, so that's the it's a long term bet in Slovenia as a, you know, a viable country where people don't want to leave, they want to stay, they want to. And the communities are all economically healthy. You don't have everything concentrated in Ljubljana, but you have all these other cities that have firms that need to be sustained.
And now say that the workers do decide to sell the company. So is this possible? Because you've said that ESOP prevents this from happening, how in what cases can this happen, and what are the consequences for the company in sense also of the tax incentive?
Well, I don't think it's legally possible to totally prevent it, so we make it very difficult. So it has to be something where some super majority of the, I think 75% of the workers have to agree to do the sale. It does happen in America. There are ESOPs that are sold. And although that's usually because of, as I mentioned, they don't pay out the money as it goes. So they let all these liabilities for the shares accumulate. So 20 years after an ESOP is set up, you've got that founding group of workers retiring, and they got all these big accounts to pay off, and then the company says, "Why? You know, we can't do it. We got to sell," and then they get the proceeds. So that's a preventable problem, and we prevented that by paying it out as you go. So you get a little bit all the time as the shares are rolled over, or recycled, as it were, inside the ESOP, But at the end of the day, if you know, a super majority of the workers want to sell, it's hard to prevent that. And
Now I'd like to move on specifically to the two Slovenian laws mm-hmm. that the government is preparing concerning worker ownership. And the Institute for Economic Democracy is advising them in preparation. So what are some key aspects that these laws, in your opinion, must include?
Well, the key thing which we didn't have before with employee ownership in Slovenia is this separate special purpose vehicle to own the shares. So the shares are not individually owned in the sense that workers cannot sell them outside, they cannot bequeath them to their heirs. And so the question is, what is the form of that special purpose vehicle? And we are going back to the cooperative tradition in Slovenia. There was an old cooperative tradition way back in the early 20th century, a fellow named Kerk, something like that. So we are using cooperative law, and the cooperative law is fairly generally written, so we have all sorts of different types of cooperatives, but we want to make it sure that this type of cooperative is legislatively based. So it's called the Employee Ownership Cooperative Act in Slovene. And so that's what it's about. It says this is a cooperative law, but it has a special purpose. It's not an operating company. It owns shares in the operating company underneath it. And these shares are split between the workers on these accounts. It's an indirect form of ownership. They can't sell them and so forth. And the tax breaks are, you see, when the company contributes cash to the ESOP to pay off the loan or directly pay off the seller, if that was considered as bonuses, then you would need to pay the, the Social Security thing, which is huge, something like 40% or something, and that would just make it unviable. So we need to say two things. Number one, the ESOP contribution is deductible from corporate tax, and it does not require the Social Security contribution because you're now building security in another way. You're getting the people ownership in their own firms. You're not putting money into a pension fund for them. You're putting money in their ownership. So it's you don't want to pay Social Security twice. So the law says, okay, you can contribute this to the ESOP, it's deductible as a corporate expense, and you don't have to pay Social Security taxes on it because it's an investment in Social Security in this other way. There's also a benefit for the seller who gets the money and then doesn't have to pay as much taxes. It's something about capital gains.
You also, in the 90s, you prepared the privatization law together with Minziger. This law also included employee-owned companies. So what was the issue, and how does ESOP differ from that law?
Well, there's two things. There's the law that I worked with Jože Minziger to draft, which was an ESOP law, and that was defeated. It passed two of the houses of parliament and was about to pass the third house, and the Christian Democratic Party panicked, brought in Jeff Sachs, and basically demagogued our law. See, we required workers to pay a certain percent of the value they got in cash over time period, but something like 10%. And Jeff Sachs demagogued it by saying, you should get it for free, and with vouchers. And we're trying to sell a voucher plan. And the making this speech to the combined Houses of Parliament and broadcast to the entire nation. And so then the people in Parliament said, this is great. We can just give it away for free and we'll get reelected or whatever. So the government withdrew support from the Minziger law. Then they drafted another law. And we organized with the trade unions and management and defeated their law. So there was no law for a year or so. And that's when I left and joined the World Bank. The law that was eventually passed was a voucher law, no ESOP. So people use their vouchers to get shares in their own company, which is fine, but that's direct ownership, and that only lasts 20 years or so until they retire. Mm-hmm. And then, who are they going to sell to? So we have all these companies now we're talking to, and they're in this mess because they have majority of workers have retired, and they don't care about employee ownership. They want to get the best, you know, well, maybe a Chinese company will come in, or maybe an American or German company will come in and give us a good offer. And so that's, you know, a big problem. So that was a form of employee ownership we call a mule firm, because mules cannot reproduce as mules. So it's a form of ownership that doesn't reproduce itself, whereas ESOP does.
And now my last question is, why do you think, or if you even think that this is the right moment for this new legislature in Slovenia, and why do you think that this current government has decided to tackle this issue?
The main support now is from the Levica and the Social Democrats, and the idea should be supported by the right-wing parties as well. I mean, they don't want communities destroyed by firms that have no succession plan and would just either be shut down or be bought out and killed. So it should be much more bipartisan support, but I don't understand Slovene politics any more than I understand Slovene language. So that's where we stand. So it's the Social Democrats and the Levica are both in the coalition, so that's where the support comes now.
Okay, thank you so much for the interview.
Z Davidom P. Ellermanom se je pogovarjala Pia Zala.
RS Interview.